Good morning. You're listening to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. I am William Morgan, and today I'm joined by Douglas Bowles on this 30th day of April for episode number 82.
Thanks, Will. Hope you're doing well today. Today we're lucky enough to continue with the synchromistic video thread by talking to one of the community's finest craftsmen. Joe Alexander has taken the baton of the initial sync video wave and run with it. And run is the apt word, as today's program should elucidate. Mr. Alexander is the founder and creative director of Apophenia Productions, responsible for the recent Gray Aliens, The Roswell Rabbit Hole, which can be found and viewed along with the studio's other successful sync video productions at Joe's personal YouTube channel, Barely Human 11. This past fall, Joe contributed a chapter to the Sync Book Volume 2 entitled The Blur. It's fabulous, and you need to read it. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the Third Timers Club.
Right.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. If Alan is our Steve Martin, then you're our Justin Timberlake. You're one of our favorite guests, and we love to have you on because it's so much fun. These conversations are great with you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't appreciate being
as long as I got my suit and tie. You pulled a fast one on us.
I did.
You did.
I didn't realize that.
Yes.
You really did.
This is not about auto-tune.
This is not anything about auto-tune. Like, where's Cher? I don't get this.
Last time we were talking, you said that your piece coming up was about auto-tune, but you did a crossover.
Yeah, you know, I actually did write the auto-tune one, but I don't know why. Just for whatever reason, I really liked the idea of the blur better, and I thought that more people would probably connect with it since it kind of like gives a direction to where everyone's sync research could be heading, as opposed to me just writing a snippet about my own personal syncs. So
right.
Both would have been cool, I think. But for whatever reason, I just decided to go this way. So
it seems like the blur or the auto-tune thing would contribute to the blur theory. The blur theory is fascinating. Could you, in a nutshell,
wait,
describe?
Wait. Before that, I want to ask how quick the inspiration for this one. Because you use your words really well, and I'm wondering how long it actually took you to choose the words, or did this all kind of spill out at once? I remember once before on one of your videos, you said it took you about 6 months to write the script for that thing.
Yeah, well, you know, the blur is something that has kind of been at the forefront of my mind in all of my sync research pretty much since I really started getting into sync, and so for that reason, it just kind of spilled out of me because I really think about it often, because I think we all do in terms of like, where is sync going? You know, what's the end game for all this? And for me, it has always come down to this concept that I call the blur. So it really wasn't that tough to just put it out there on paper.
You came up with the blur yourself. I mean, obviously you're influenced by different philosophies, philosophers, different ideas, but this is your original contribution to sync. Yes?
I guess you could call it that, but like you said, you know, it's based on so much of the work of the other people in the sync community, and to be honest with you, I don't know if it already exists out there in some original form. So
well, it's interesting because I thought of, I mean, we've spoken to Dr. Jeffrey Kripal a couple times on this program, and so parts of your blur remind me of his
his thesis
from Mutants and Mystics. I've forgotten what he calls it, but it's like the super story that there's various
here the blur will make superheroes of us all. It will make Green Lanterns of our neighbors, Supermen of our sons, Wonder Women of our daughters, and Zeuses of the conscious collective. I mean, he's basically saying that media, I mean, what What Kripal's saying is that the whole human potential movement has parallels to mythologies of Superman comic books or superhero comic books there. Do you get what I'm saying? So in Joe's saying the basic same thing, that the evolution of the Superman is being perpetrated by the media.
But it's not being perpetrated by the media. It's being perpetrated by
supported. What's the word? Fuck.
All right, Joe. Describe the blur to us and our listeners.
Yeah, I think the blur concept is something that everyone is pretty much familiar with on an everyday level, in that we know that when we start to believe in ourselves and believe in our capabilities and potentials, then we make those potentials a possibility. Everyone's heard the sort of cliche notion that, you know, if you believe you can, then you can. If you believe you can't, then you can't. So basically what the blur does is it just takes that notion and applies it to us observing ourselves doing supernatural things. And right now, the only way we can observe that is on the media screen or on TV. And so what the blur says is that as we continue to observe the TV, we continue to observe humans doing crazy things, we'll start to believe that we can actually do these things, because the line between what we're observing being real and fake starts to blur. And that blur comes about because of the incredible advancements in media technology. So it's to the point where we can look at media and not know whether it's real or fake. That then starts to play on our subconscious belief systems. And then we start to believe that we can. And once we believe that we can, then we start to manifest. So
once before, though, you had mentioned how you thought this was real. You specifically said, guys, I think this is real. And the Hollywood sign has so much symbolism as far as being some kind of Stargate apparatus. I mean, where are you at on this? Is it?
Yeah. Well, I think when we look at Sync, we all tend to try to quantify, you know, is this literal? Is this metaphorical?
Right.
And I think that it's a little bit of both. But, you know, really, and at the end of the day, they're almost the same thing. You know, and so with regard to, you know, Hollywood as some kind of portal, it only is metaphorical if you look at it in the present. Like if you say, well, Hollywood is going to transform the human race and help everybody evolve. You know, it's really just a metaphor in the present, because if you look at it over a long stretch of time, like 50 or 100 years, then it becomes literal. You know, then it becomes, well, you know, Hollywood really has transformed, at the very least, our perceptions or our values, possibly our belief systems. So over a long period of time, it becomes literal. And in the present, it's metaphorical. So I do believe that Hollywood is literally a portal, but it will take a long period of time.
So the question that I wrote on page 55 of your piece in the Sync book, the following page after your piece ends, when does pop culture become mythology, or is it already?
That's tough to say.
Because
sure
on one side,
an
you
it.
Do yeah. kind of argue that it is.
I think we're being mean to our man, Joe.
No, it's cool. No, I welcome the questions. I think that you could make a case that it is mythological in nature, mostly because the characters in it are, you know, they're fictional characters that have superhuman qualities, yet they are supposed to be in a large part human. So it's almost like mythology is really just about merging the human and the deity, you know, creating this sort of human deity. And maybe we do that. Maybe we build these stories because we as humans subconsciously believe that we're almost there, we're almost deities, or that it's possible for us to do these things. So I guess in that sense, it is kind of mythology, pop culture.
Well, the thought, I mean, the whole idea of mythology interests me because it seems like, from our scientific materialistic point of view, mythology is something that other cultures did, and that our culture on the whole kind of if there's a mythology, and we don't think of it in mythology, we think of its religion, which is based on, you know, historical fact. And so then we look at the Greeks or the Romans and kind of snicker because of how silly their stories, you know, their scriptural things. You know, it's like there's no difference between pop culture or Greek mythology or the Bible necessarily. It's just, I guess, our focus or reverence for the thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that it's some sort of innate quality in human beings that causes us to want to create this sort of pop culture. Today we call it pop culture, but back then they called it mythology. But maybe they thought of it more in terms of pop culture back then too. But it seems like no matter what time period you're in, we always, as a collective, have this inclination to do that, to deify human beings, to put them on this pedestal. And for whatever reason that is, I'm not 100% sure, but I do have my own theories. But I do think that it is, you know, very much like mythology. So,
have you ever heard of the Siddhas before? Siddhis?
No, I haven't.
They're part of the Yoga Sutras, but they basically, I think it's the word translates to attainments.
Okay.
But there, and you know, it includes instructions for learning these impossible tasks. I mean, levitation, invisibility, power to walk on water, you know, stuff
right.
like that.
Right. I've heard of flagpole sitta.
Is that Harvey Danger?
Yes. Yeah.
Paranoia.
Yeah. Out to get me.
Hold on. I got to take a break after that.
Yeah. Speaking of attainment, so first the mind observes the disintegration of limitations. Then the mind develops a new belief system that encompasses these new possibilities. Finally, the subconscious begins manifesting new reality, one that allows for these new possibilities to be realized. And so that's the blur in a nutshell, as you say in your intro. But the thing that I kept thinking about as I read this was the movie Dark City, how...
Right, because he does the same thing. Basically, Kiefer Sutherland injects him with false memories to make him believe that he can do these things.
Right.
So it's an interesting concept because the whole thing is it's manufactured. It's like a Akashic memory. Like if we were to get all of the DNA memory from all the generations that came before us, our whole, you know, physiological potential would change. Does that make sense? So
yeah. No, sorry. Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. I was.
Yeah, to me that makes perfect sense. I'd say that if you ask most people about some kind of phenomenon along those lines, they would agree with you. I think everybody understands that our beliefs govern our ability to manipulate reality. So what extent each individual is willing to accept that principle is, you know, dependent on the individual. To me, it extends far beyond things like, you know, learning how to overcome mild obstacles that we encounter in our lives. For me, it's about, you know, things as crazy as flight and you know, the things that you could attribute only to comic book superheroes. You know, to me, those right. things are possible through our belief systems. So
but
through engineering our belief systems.
Is that why comic book movies are so popular? Is this like some kind of manifestation of what we want to see?
Well, for me, I believe that that we create these sort of mythical gods who are a cross between human and deity because human beings are wired to worship things that are just beyond the boundaries of what our current capabilities are. You know, to me, that's the reason that this whole ET phenomenon is really taken over and kind of going mainstream. To me, the reason is because human beings we're on the verge of breaking our boundaries and going into the extraterrestrial realms, you know, as a race. as a species. And, you know, you can look at that as us worshiping the entities that are just on the fringe or just on the border of what we're capable of today. And so that's kind of what comic book superheroes are, is that, you know, they look like humans, they are humans in every aspect, but they have one or two little things that we can't do just yet, but we're just on the verge of it. And so to me, human beings are wired to do that. We always have been. Like, if you look at cultures throughout history, it seems like there's a pattern where we're always worshiping things that are just on the verge of what we can do. Like, before we could go into the sea, it seems like the most ancient cultures, they're worshiping fish gods, right? Because we know we're just on the verge of being able to go to the sea. And then beyond that,
oh, I see.
You know, the next cultures, they start to worship all their gods in the form of avian birds. Because we know that we've already conquered the sea, and we're just on the verge of being able to go into the sky. So suddenly our gods become this cross between humans and birds. And now it seems like, as a whole, we're starting to almost recognize that ETs might just be our gods. You know?
Right.
They're our super cross humanoid deities, and we're just on the verge of being able to go there. So it seems like, obviously, ETs have probably always been here, but first we had to worship the fish, and then we had to worship the birds, and now that we're ready to go into space, now we form this cross-human deity with ETs. It's because we're ready to go into that realm. So.
Okay, well, so then
shit's crispy.
I have to connect this to my own little geekiness. This is show number 82. 1982 is when E.T. came out. The summer of 1982, that's when the Spielberg's film E.T. came out. But your glyph for your piece in the Sync book that Mark Golding created has starfish, which you end up with your fish and your stars in that – in that little thing. But so the interesting thing to me is your chapter is chapter 5, and so, you know, there's 5 limbs on a starfish, so, you know, you have lots and lots of 5s in this glyph that's on page 42, so the 42 glyph. But then on page 55 there's the letter
E.
Is the E, which is letter 5, and 555 has been following me around for a long
555. I, you know what? It's funny because Back to the Future's. I always remember the number 555 because when she writes her name down on the flyer, on the back of the lightning strike flyer.
Right.
That was like when I was a kid. That was the first thing where it was like the number 555, and I remember asking an adult, "What's up with the 555?" And they're like, "Well, all telephone numbers in Movie Land are 555."
Oh. Isn't that in, like, a Schwarzenegger film, too, where they actually go through the screen?
Oh, you're talking about Last Action Hero?
Yeah, maybe.
Actually, that becomes kind of cool if you think of it in terms of, you know, the iPhone being the movie screen with regards to its dimension. And then you think about, you know, E.T. phoning home and,
nice.
You know, he has his finger that he uses to indicate that he wants to go home. If you think of it in terms like the iPhone and the touchscreen and the monolith,
oh, that shit's good.
You know, it all connects. And then if you go into that realm of the phones and the movies, you know, then the number is 555.
Oh, that's so good. And E.T.'s like Michael Jackson, like gripping hold of E.T. as some kind of like pop icon. It's just how the crossover of media as alien. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's so good.
You know, I was thinking something else. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I can't remember. I was trying to, so go ahead and maybe I'll remember what I was going to say because it slipped away from me.
It's just a small tangent, but this kind of struck me the other day. I was looking at that famous photo at the end of 2001, at the very end where the monolith appears at the end of the bed, and it struck me that, and it's probably struck other people too, I don't know if it's been written about to a large extent, but that the monolith is could be viewed as a tombstone, right?
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard this explored or not, but
I haven't heard this. No,
that makes sense.
It just kind of struck me
just
that
not.
If you know, if you go to a graveyard, you know, it seems like residing above our dead mortal bodies are these, you know, chiseled cut monoliths, and so you could make the connection that we've ascended and our death is representative of us touching the monolith. And so I dubbed that the monolith is the tombstone. And it's interesting that the star of the movie Tombstone is Kurt Russell.
Stargate.
Yeah, in light of Jack's exploration.
Yes, yes.
Well, when I did that Rose McGowan videos, the tombstone became a real big resonator. Like everywhere I turned, there was tombstones. But it was surfaced on that movie, Tombstone and Kurt Russell and everything. So that's just cool. Oh, I remember what I was going to say now. Gray's Almanac, because when you were talking about the way that you were describing the stars and the superheroes and everything is the same thing as why we hold professional athletes in high regard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we see professional athletes doing something that is just beyond our physical capability, and how that crisscrosses as the Gray's Almanac that he gets from the future. Because it's like a record of human potential for.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
No, yeah, that's really interesting. Because if you want to talk like modern mythology, you could talk pop culture, but I think a close second or possibly an equal would be the pop culture of the sports world. So if you wanted to point to any deity, you know, you'd have to say, well, it's Superman and Wolverine and these people, but then. Even to a more realistic
Bo
extent.
Bo Jackson!
Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
Exactly. So to plaster the Gray's Almanac on that theme is pretty powerful.
Well, can I commend your artistry? So the thing, in all your videos and in the Sync Book piece, there's a level of artistry that tickles me so much. So the theory is called the blur. And you're stating how the distinction between our possibilities and media are blurring because of, you know, we're watching, you know, these paradigm shattering potentialities on the screen and then thinking we can do these things. But then, you know, throughout you're using language like accelerating pace and running, you know, because you start with this idea of the 4-minute mile being shattered. Right. So it's funny because, of course, the runner is going to be a blur because he's going so fast.
Yeah.
And so I keep thinking about this, and you're talking about flow and, you know, just movement. And so way to go.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate that, man.
For the record, he starts with pro athletes.
Right.
And he even mentions the whole time travel thing, like if the guy who did it the second
right. time. He's got Gray's.
I still go to the Gray's Almanac.
Yeah.
And then what that has to do with extraterrestrials and whatever. And I wonder how fast E.T. would run the 40 in.
He doesn't run so fast. I mean, he moves pretty good, but makes a goofy little noise.
Stop.
Actually, interestingly enough, the benchmark for the 40 among pro athletes is 4.3, and if you can run it in 4.2, then you're pretty much superhuman.
That's nice.
Of course, it's 42.
Nice. I just love how this whole idea of media pushes performance pushes media just interests the hell out of me.
Well, I discovered
symbiotic
something similar.
Evolution between both man and media.
Yep.
When they created the dictionary, it was the same thing, where all of a sudden language is influencing the dictionary, is influencing language. You know, it's like a mirror, that you hold up this mirror to something and all of a sudden it starts playing with itself in the mirror.
See, I often wonder, though, what you also mentioned about how we would be able to entertain ourselves with very little, basically, is what I got out of it. That's not how you worded it. I'm paraphrasing. But it makes me think of the whole goal of the blur is like the preparation for space travel or whatever. We have to get to the point where we can see the mundane differently if we're going to be able to burden the boredom of space travel.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting aspect of it. I never thought of that, actually, that, you know, Yeah, for space travel, you have to sort of have a piece about you. You know, you don't need to go to extravagant heights to entertain yourself and to feel like you're living a fulfilling life. You can just sort of float in space.
Yeah, your why explore, even the way you entitled that, you said something along, let's see if I can find it, where it will know that to be here now is to be everywhere, every when.
Yeah.
So the whole craziness or the non-logic thought process would have to be a necessity for space travel. So you wouldn't lose your mind about being so distant from the timekeeping sun.
Yeah, that's interesting on another level, in that if you just think about the correlation between leaving Earth and going into the heavens, I guess, you do kind of have to be on another spiritual level mentally. So it's interesting that to literally cope with the physical demands of floating in space for decades and decades, you have to be, you know, more at peace and more evolved spiritually. So that's cool.
So that's why, I mean, that's the grays then. So the grays would be it'd be a symbolic representation of our future selves, as seen through media. Like it was the media is preparing us to be aliens like the gray, to leave the Earth, to leave the planet. I can't control where you're making me go, Joe.
You know, the thing that always, every once in a while, freaks me out is there's this great book called Childhood's End, where there is an ascension of sorts, where they're called the Indigo Children, and they actually do attain their godhood at the end of the book. You know, they end up kind of destroying the Earth in the process, but it's fascinating. But they do. They eventually go off planet. They figure out their powers, and then all of a sudden they rapture out, basically. You know, and I wonder. Sometimes I wonder about that.
Do not go into song lyrics again, Doug. Please, no more song lyrics, Doug.
No, I like that term of rapture out because, you know, I often wonder, you know, when we hit this tipping point where we can say that we've ascended, will it even be noticeable? And obviously rapturing out with the idea of leaving the planet is obviously noticeable. But, you know, if something less than that were to happen, like we were just to stay on Earth and be at peace, for example, you know, could that be considered, you know, rapturing out?
Rapturing in.
Rapturing in, yeah.
And I like that even more, the idea of like being more embodied.
Yeah, and even if we were to rapture out, you know, would that even be, you know, as spiritual as rapturing in or staying? Or would that just be another representation of our, you know, our misguided desire to leave home and to go searching for bigger and better things, when maybe the reality is that where we are now is where everything is? So maybe the true enlightenment would be to rapture in and to stay on Earth and be at peace and not need to go searching for answers that we really already have.
Grow down.
Which is at the end of the day what the Wizard of Oz is all about. So.
Yeah, and I think you basically say the same thing somewhere in your blurb chapter about how we're driven to explore to find out that we already know. Because we don't know that we know that we need to go out to figure out that we know.
That's what I meant earlier, Joe. I mean, it's really easy reading your writing because you use your words really well. You say it in the best possible way to say it. I know I'm gushing again, but
so how long did it take you to write this?
Right.
Was this a lot of work for you, or is this effortless?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's effortless, but I do feel like, as you guys probably do, it's just such a big part of my life, and I probably just write the way that I think about the stuff, and I write the way that I explain it to my girlfriend, you know, on a daily basis. So I guess when it's time to put it down, it just kind of flows, I guess. So.
Because the nice thing about your writing is that it's comforting, but then it's also challenging. So it does its work fairly non-confrontational. So, like, you challenge people, but you do it it's so joyful and just so it doesn't freak me out is the nice thing is what I'm saying. I need to read it. It's like, oh yes, yes, this is right. This is good. And so, listeners, if you don't have a copy of the Sync Book, you need to get one. This is
I had it out
in the world with a pencil, and it feels good to be in this book.
I think that's a great way to word it. I think from the very first day that I picked up Sync Book 1 and I read Sybil's chapter, I was just like, you know, this not only connects with me, but it feels good to be in this space.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like yummy medicine that you get to take every now and again. It's like, oh yeah, I know this stuff. I love this stuff.
Yes.
Let's see. So, are you working on any new videos?
Yeah, I have a few videos in the works. Nothing that has kind of hit that tipping point where I'm just like madly obsessed and driven to finish it. But I'm sure that'll happen soon enough.
I noticed that you were pretty inspired after your Always Record. You got that Gray's video out pretty quickly. Or were you already working on that? You couldn't have been. Some of the information came from that Always Record.
Most of the information did come from Alan and Bill and David. So, you know, they really inspired a lot of the stuff behind that. And, right after we did that episode, it just became a crazy junction of all these syncs coming at me. And I just felt like I had to make it. And so
it's funny. That video is so dense. It doesn't seem like it's that dense, but then once you realize how many little connections are just in the little shop there from Blast from the Past, it's like, whoa.
Yeah, the video gets pretty wild. I mean, the idea that JFK was in search of the information with regards to aliens is obviously speculative, but it seems like if you believe that synchromysticism can point you to answers that otherwise couldn't be found or that maybe nobody even knows, then this seems to be one of those cases where it's like JFK wants this information and suddenly we see a bust of his head at the location where this information is kind of revealed by this movie. So it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
And then actually Alan pointed out later that next to JFK's head is the word bomb, and the whole sync was revolved around the idea that JFK wanted to know about the aliens and that the aliens came about with A-bombs.
If anybody listening is curious about where that information came from, that was episode 36 of Always Record, called Gray's Sync Almanac with Joe Alexander.
Yeah, and one of the great things about that information is it kind of came into creation when the four of us sat down and did that episode. So, you know, it's always nice when you can see the evolution of these syncs take place, and they really took place, you know, before everyone's ears, I guess, on that episode. It wasn't like anyone had sat down beforehand and researched it out. So it was cool to see it all evolve and come together.
Oh, I think that having more than one pair of sync goggles on anything creates a space where brainstorming is really productive.
Well, you say as much in your piece, Joe. You say that with enough attention, it really ends up reflecting more and more of the individuals looking.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we all believe that the more minds are converged on points, or the more pieces of attention that are pointed towards something, you know, the more that thing will then reflect, you know, those individuals involved, or I guess the more power is then given. It's almost like a bunch of different laser beams. If they're pointed at one thing, then their power is magnified.
So what do you think as far as sync goes? Is this going to be a lot more part of the consensus in the years to come? Or do you think that it is kind of a man behind the curtain? Like, everybody sees pop culture, but everybody doesn't see, like, the gritty sync behind the curtain.
Whew. I can't say for sure. I'm not sure that it might even be necessary for everybody to sort of come along for the ride in order for everyone to be taken along with it, which I think is probably evident if you're into what's now mainstream conspiratorial things, where there's a small faction controlling nearly everything. You know, perhaps something similar will take place with, you know, majestic sink heads. And once 10% of the population is swept up by this and believe it, then, you know, the other 90% has no choice but to at least be governed by it, or have their direction in history dictated by it. So, but who knows? Or maybe the opposite is true. Maybe everyone will start to indulge it, and it'll really become more mainstream. That would be great. You know, if that would be my ideal situation, is if anyone that I walk down the street and want to talk to about it, they would be into it. So,
hey, brother, do you see that 42 on that moving truck over there? She's crazy.
I think that that is possible, because I believe that all humans, you know, have the capacity to realize this sort of sync stuff. It's really just about the right salesman pitching it to them, because, you know, even the most you know, hard-headed, stubborn person who doesn't believe in anything like this, you know, you give them the right sales pitch and expose them to the right amount of information at the right time in the right increments, and suddenly they're like, there's something to this, and then you can snowball it from there. But, you know, just like getting anyone to believe anything, it's really about mastering the craft of seducing them into this frame of mind. So I guess with the right premeditation, it could really become mainstream.
And how do you feel about that? Are you mostly pretty confident in – I mean, so
he said
personally –
that was his ideal. I mean
– do you ever – see, this is all well and good, but every once in a while I think, oh, we're a bunch of nutters. What the fuck are we talking
about?
You
get over that, Holes. You get over that after a while. See, the cool thing is like, you know, it's cool to have – thank you for your comments on my YouTube channel lately, Joe. They have been very encouraging. The fact that we have individuals in a community who nod at each other when stuff is, you know, put out there, because once you're making sync product and you have people going, hey, I see that too, then the whole question of insanity goes away, in my opinion. Like, there's an agreement going on here, and it's growing.
Yeah, no question. And just like an individual sometimes needs to go to their spouse or whomever their support system is to let them know, like, hey, you're not nuts. You know, that's essential in any group, too. You know, you need to have a sort of team mentality where you say, look, when you're feeling like you're losing your mind, you know, don't worry, I'll let you know that everything's cool. And I feel like because of the nature of the information, which is that, you know, it's sort of altruistic and spiritual in nature, it's been easy to develop a community that picks each other up. Conversely, you could look at a community like politics, where, you know, the nature is sort of developed around, well, you know, individual aspirations, and it sort of creates a community where people don't want to pick each other up. They want to break each other down. But luckily, I think we don't have that. So like you said, Doug, you know, you feel crazy, and other people tell you, well, you know, you're not so crazy. And I don't know where I'm going with this. But
I'm telling you, Doug, you're not crazy enough, homie.
I know. But I'm definitely straddling the fence. And so I think I explain this to people, so that traditional consciousness – is pretty rigid, but they'd like to enjoy our world, and our world is kind of that cartoon land in Roger Rabbit, you know. But they want it in a nice box. So if you put it in a film that's non-confrontational, they enjoy trippy coincidences, and they just love that kind of stuff. But to slip into that as a form of consciousness,
well, to me.
Pretty freaky for a lot of people.
Right.
Like,
well,
you guys are nuts.
The sync community has got to be able to learn not to be forceful with it. Because once you get to – that's the problem with conspiracy theories. It's great when they say, hey, none of this that the government's telling us makes any sense. But as soon as they start trying to explain what's going on, that's when everybody goes, oh, you're crazy. So you don't I mean, you have to explain sync, but you don't try to explain why sync is there. That's not necessary. All that's really necessary is just the show, because the message is in the media itself. Like, once you make, the Armed with a Dream, perfect example, the new video by
Seal Line. If you watch all 15 minutes of it, it becomes painfully obvious that you're doing most of the work anyways, because you're making connections that Jake's not pointing out because Jake's not saying anything. Then the whole aspect that it's there becomes the whole purpose of it being there. Does that make any sense at all? Can I get an amen?
Yeah, definitely. It is interesting you pointed out that, you know, the observer is doing all the work because, you know, you're not really being walked through it.
All right. Well, we've got about a couple minutes left.
I do want to say something crazy about that video real quick.
Which one?
Please.
Armed with a Dream. So I watched Armed with a Dream at 10 a.m., I guess the day after it came out. And at 11 o'clock, I went and met with my trainer. And he said to me that he had this long bike ride over the weekend, and he was really hurting. And if you know anything about bike rides, they ride like 80 miles, 100 miles. They're really nuts. And so he told me that along the ride, he just kept having to tell himself, you know, pain is not real. It's just in your head, and your body can push through it. Pain's not real. And then for the first time, I've known him for years, the first time in our relationship, he said to me, unless, of course, you're cutting your own arm off. And he proceeded to put his hand on his forearm as if he was sawing it off. And he spent the next 10 seconds doing a sawing motion, you know, sawing it off right under the elbow. And having just watched Jake's Arm with a Dream, you know, about an hour ago, I just stood with my eyes as big as grapefruits. It was wild.
But that's the message, though, isn't it? I mean, the message is that the limbs are artificial. Like, the real limbs are artificial.
Ah, I see. Yes. So the idea that the pain isn't real is
right.
Also ties to the limbs are artificial, yeah.
Putting Jack back together again. Jack would be synonymous with, like, Jupiter or, like, the... It's almost like saying that everybody's the superhero. Everybody's Jupiter. It's all the same consciousness. It's all Jupiter consciousness or Zeus. You said it in your book even. You said Zeus collective.
Yeah, and that whole Zeus collective and tying it in with Tin, if you want to do some classic sync stuff, is really interesting at this point in time, because if you've been to the movies lately, and depending on what theater you go to, they'll have the little posters out of the movies that are coming up. And at least at the theater that I was at near my house, they had the three pending releases, which was Iron Man. And next to it was Superman, which had the
Man
big
of Steel.
Bold letters, Man of Steel. And next to that was Wolverine, who's made of titanium.
Who's made of the adamantium.
Okay, yeah, that's it, guys.
That's right, yep.
We got our trio of Steel Sync, so thank you. You've been listening to Joe Alexander on 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com. Joe's work can be found at youtube.com/user/barelyhuman11. For more information about the SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com/42minutes. If you like what you hear and you would like to support the show, by all means, follow the link on the website to the donation page. Thank you, and have a wonderful Tuesday.
Word, Joe.
Word.